Hey, Capacity Fam, this is Nick coming back with another discussion-based podcast. What we're going to be talking about today is what manual therapy and the use of hands-on care can do to fill gaps in your progress, either as a client or as a provider. Before we get into that, just a couple more updates on things. So, have fun podcasts coming up. We have a podcast with Joe Locoso, who is a high school varsity coach, but also a specialist in kind of vestibular brain functional neurology training, more for the athletic side of things. I know we've had a couple guests lately talking about that, but I think it's super interesting to learn about the cognitive side of how you move. I think there's whole bunch of info out there on the strength and conditioning side of things, but when it gets to like the cognitive, the mind side of movement and the history of pain and your perception of pain and movement, I don't know, I find it super interesting. So he'll be coming up for a local podcast. We also have podcasts on mindfulness and mental behind pain and movement, and a couple other fun guests coming up, so stay tuned. As always, reach out with questions, guest requests, content requests, and we'd love to kind of fill any sort of gaps that you guys have. But let's get into it. So, manual therapy. I think these days, I don't know, it feels like the world we live in, especially for health and wellness and fitness and rehab and all the above, is things are just so polarizing. And it can be confusing, particularly if you're newer into the profession, really, to cipher out what is real, what is not, what do you do. So first off, if you're ever in that scenario, always just go with your gut, and usually the middle ground is correct. So if you're really far on one side or the other side with a camp, you're probably off a little kilter, where if you can kind of find that middle ground and do what you think works best and often what you get the best results, don't fall into the trap of what you see on a research paper, what you see on a social media post. Kind of know through your previous experiences what really works best. But when it comes to manual therapy, you know, you'll see people who show that there's 12 articles that say manual therapy doesn't work. You'll find people who say that there's 12 articles that manual therapy does work. And right, usually the middle ground is what's accurate. But manual therapy in particular, and as well as neuromuscular control and neuro, is really hard to research. Unlike a exercise-based research protocol, where you do this exercise, whatever it is, 4 sets of 8 for 4 weeks and see if your strength gets better, it's a lot easier to create a randomized controlled trial with less gaps in it. But when you're talking about soft tissue mobilization, when you're talking about neuromuscular control, when you're talking about PNF and all these other variables, it's a lot less rigid and more dynamic, and there's more of an art to it, which is why it's harder to research. For that reason, I feel like that's why it's sometimes harder for people to grasp and why they kind of avoid it, right? They don't do what they don't know, where if you can kind of expose yourself to some of these principles, you can get a lot better changes. But what do I see as manual therapy? What is it doing to help maybe fill the gaps in what we're trying to do for our clients? So, first off, exercise strength is king. All of us should be striving to basically to load the basic movement patterns of hinging, squatting, pushing, pulling, carrying, crawling, rolling, and so forth. If we are not getting to those movement patterns and we're not training the body through this developmental motor sequence, we are doing a disservice. You are then creating dependency. You are creating more of a passive treatment model where you'll get changes, but they'll be short-lived, and then you're really not creating an independent wellness-based program for people to follow and have long-term results. So that's the most important thing. So we're talking about manual therapy and how that might be an additional cogwheel to how that improves its performance, right? So if our end range goal is to find a movement pattern of dysfunction, retrain that movement pattern and load it, and then progress it, how could manual therapy be an asset to that? I think the first thing, when I describe manual therapy, I include PNF in that process because it's hands-on care and you're retraining the neuromuscular system. PNF really hangs its hat on the principles of initiation, strength, endurance, and relaxation. If you can't initiate, you can't produce force, you can't produce force over a period of time, and you can't have the ability to relax or turn down the tone in those situations, you really aren't using the muscles and you're not coordinating it correctly. So whenever you have pain, you lose this feed-forward mechanism, or you lose the ability to have more of a proximal response to create distal mobility. How do we retrain that, right? So let's just say whatever reason, they have back pain, you're retraining bridges, you're retraining side planks, you're doing all these great exercises that everybody needs to be doing. That doesn't necessarily mean that you've restored that feed-forward mechanism, that proximal stability helping distal mobility. So manual therapy or PNF is huge in that, right? Basic principle is something's inhibited, put the body in a position of inhibition, retrain that motor pattern, retrain the homunculus, the ability for the brain to map where that body is in space and how to recruit the appropriate postural muscles, which are also called tonic stabilizers. So manual therapy can be huge in restoring the appropriate neuromuscular control or strength of the joint. More often than not, when you have chronic issues, chronic back pain, the inflammation calms down, the movement pattern restores, but you don't get that inherent tonic or postural stability, and you don't restore the initiation of the muscle group. And there's tons of research with Paul Hodges out of Australia as a primary example of it, of when we have pain, just simply because it goes away doesn't mean that the stability appropriately returns, and this can be 10, 20, 30 years later. So again, point being is if you're an exercise-based therapist, which I think we all should be, if you don't use your hands to help retrain some of those patterns of crawling, rolling, PNF, of pelvic scapula, bridging, lower trunk rotation, half kneel, tall kneel, and so forth, you're really not retraining the dysfunction that developed. And so what happens is you end up loading that dysfunction and problems persist. So I think manual therapy can be huge to get the appropriate control of the muscle groups to ensure when you're doing the movement pattern, you're not loading on top of dysfunction. I think the other huge thing with manual therapy, it's changing tone. So when you have dysfunction, tone develops. I have acute low back pain, my muscles are freaking out, they guard and tone develops. When I have chronic ankle dysfunction, I've never loaded my ankle, I inherently have tone, I've lost that motor control or that motor mapping to my brain, and dysfunction develops. When you simply put your hands on someone, you create stimulation of blood flow, of the actual muscle spindles, maybe you're creating some warmth to the area. What that's doing is changing tone or changing the body's perception of that region. So you could be doing whatever manual therapy technique you want to be doing. If you add it to an area of dysfunction, take it back into the movement pattern afterwards, there's a reduction in tone, right? So that might be a short-lived thing, but who cares? If the tone reduction is reduced, the body then kind of accepts the area again, and you start to load it, it's going to happen that much easier, and you're going to get quicker results. So that 5 minutes of hands-on care is going to make the next 20 minutes of exercise that much better. I think another huge gap that manual therapy can really fill is how soft tissue dysfunction develops and how we need to restore efficiency of the soft tissue system. So when it comes to a joint issue, the issue is usually extra-articular. So by that, I mean it's rarely an issue inside the joint. There are exceptions to that. If you have a loose bone fragment, if you have a labral tear, if you have a true, you know, acute trauma where there's like a fracture to something, yes, there are stuff in the joint or intra-articular that are the issue. But then more often than not, when you have any form of itis, rotator cuff tendonitis, patellar tendonitis, bursitis, sciatica, any of these buzzwords, they're usually because of issues extra-articularly, meaning tissue, fascia, ligaments, tendons, and so forth. All the structures outside the joint usually become dysfunctional, where if you can restore the efficiency of those soft tissue structures outside the joint itself then has this free movement. So I call it like a dirty lever. If you clean up what's around the joint, there's this nice clean lever then to pivot and move off of. And manual therapy is huge in that, right? So you might say, well, I don't need to use manual therapy. I can foam roll, I can gun, I can put a band somewhere and do like my own banded mobilizations, and I love all that stuff. I think that's great, and that's maybe another discussion on how to use that stuff. But what manual therapy can do that those structures don't do is really localize the dysfunction, load the dysfunction in three dimensions, and then take it into the movement patterns. And this is kind of a theme, right? So let's use foam rolling. Let's use your rectus femoris. You have a soccer athlete. You are a soccer athlete who's got rectus femoris issues from repetitive kicking that probably stem from some trunk issue. You could go in and you could foam roll it. You could lacrosse ball it. But most often than not, what you're doing is a linear technique on a linear dysfunction. So you're almost causing more compression and adhesion to an area that's already compressed and adherent, right? Which is why tools like cupping, myofascial decompression, cross-fictional, circumferential, and then localization of wherever the dysfunction is in regards to depth, direction, are all huge in restoring the efficiency. So what I'm saying is if you use a tool, more often than that, you might be facilitating the soft tissue dysfunction and irritating it even more, where manual therapy can localize it, create more of a three-dimensional load to create what I call like sliding. Can you get that rectus femoris to slide over that ASIS and the deep structures below it? Can you get the skin and fascia to slide and glide on top of that rectus femoris? And manual therapy, I think, can achieve that. Now, using A-stim and doing soft tissue for 45 minutes is probably overdoing it, where if you can just find your localized spot, spend 30 seconds or less on the localized spot and find two or three of those along the fascial line of restriction, that's all you need. It can be 5 minutes or less, and then you take in maybe your PNF and then get them off the table and do whatever movement pattern of dysfunction. But hugely valuable tool, and to really localize where that soft tissue dysfunction, where I just feel like a vibrating ball just doesn't pick it up. And my last thing on manual therapy in regards to its use for improving movement efficiency is just the application of load. Like I said to start, load up a barbell, put a heavy kettlebell, do carries, pull a sled, all these great things are top tier. What we're talking about are ways that maybe you can accent that. And I've found that the use of your hands to create resistance to the trunk, the extremity, whatever you're working on, can find the appropriate load and unlike any other weight can. So for instance, let's say we're doing someone with a hip flexion issue. I'm going back to the hip, but rectus, maybe it's psoas, maybe it's TFL, whatever the issue is. It's a very superficial dominated movement pattern. You're trying to teach that deep core response to the hip. If you put a band on their feet, if you put a weight on their thigh and have them replicate hip flexion, it's really hard to find that appropriate load to facilitate that trunk response. If you go too light, it'll be too easy. If you go too heavy, it'll be too hard, and you'll get more of that phasic or superficial response. Using your hands, and it can even be in a weight-bearing position or whatever movement you're doing to provide load, can give that exact amount of resistance they need to create that summation, or a fancy way to build up that core response to what you're looking for. So to summarize, and to kind of respect your guys' time here and get in and out of here with some good content for you, what did manual therapy do, or what can manual therapy do to accent the most important thing that we're trying to do with every one of our clients, which is load the developmental movement patterns and progress load over time? Manual therapy can provide a neuromuscular response unlike any exercise will, because your body's always going to go to the path of least resistance. Even if it's a pattern that's tricky, your body's always going to use what it's good at, not what it's bad at. Your hands are going to fill that gap. The other big one is soft tissue. Most issues in joints are soft tissue, or what's going on outside the joint. No tool, no gadget can localize, facilitate sliding and gliding like your hands can. And the third thing I said was just providing load, providing that appropriate load to promote the response that you're looking for. So if you're a manual therapist, I encourage you to do more than manual therapy. If you're an exercise-based PT, I encourage you to get some of the basic training. And whenever I'm teaching courses or out there talking with people, the one class I recommend, no matter who you are, is take PNF. I teach with the Institute of Physical Art. I obviously believe in what they do, and I think they have an amazing PNF level course, but there's so many other ways to learn PNF, and there's so much more to it than contract, relax, or whatnot. So hopefully that was worthwhile. Hopefully you learned a thing or two. Long story short, the middle ground's always best. Find your middle ground that gives you the best outcomes possible, that's based on evidence and based on what you've seen work with your clients in the past. Thanks, and have a good one.